Can an example of generosity lead the greedy to be less grasping and help them become more generous? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide. A study guide author for the series on Ezra and Nehemiah. My conversation partners are Brent Berglund and Dave Thomas, both teachers in the Walla Walla University School of Theology. Now, let's start with that question. What power of generosity is there to nudge people in the right direction? I mean, an example. Does an example work, or do you need to hit them with words?
Well, what example are you thinking of from Nehemiah, Alden, just to get us started here?
Nehemiah 5 is amazing. I'll read just the passage here from 14. Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allowance of the governor. The former governors who were before me laid heavy burdens on the people and took food and wine from them, besides 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants lorded over the people, but I did not do so because of the fear of God. Indeed, I devoted myself to the work on this wall and acquired no land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 people, Jews and officials, besides those who came to us from the nations around us. Now that which was prepared for one day was one ox and six choice sheep. Also fowls were prepared for me, and every 10 days skins of wine in abundance. Yet with all this I did not demand the food allowance of the governor, because of the heavy burden of labor on the people. Remember for my good, O my God, all that I have done for this people. That last sentence is such a funny one. You know, after telling about all this generosity, then he says, I hope you have a notch in your hatchet handle up there for me, Lord. But that is an incredible example of generosity. I don't know where Nehemiah got all this money, but to have 150 people at your table?
And who is cooking all the food and doing all that? I mean, that's several people are working there.
Must have been. That's right.
So I do think that examples do prompt generosity, Alden. And sometimes, you know, I mean, the story of the widow and the widow's mite comes to my mind.
Yep.
That in terms of the amount of money, it was minuscule, but in terms of effect, it's huge. And you wonder how many shekels, if I can call them that, over the 2,000 years of Christianity have come in because of that example. So I do think that there are example does help. It's not automatic.
And it seems like positive peer pressure as well can affect the situation. When others around you are giving, if you're the only one who's not putting something into the plate, you can look a little bit like a miser, and especially if everybody knows you drive a BMW.
Which is not a good motivation.
Well, it's...
And I think there are some people who will never be generous. They just, doesn't matter what happens, they won't be generous.
Yeah. It's an awkwardness, and I suspect... Well, I mean, it's my feeling. When the plate is passed, or the whatever is passed, I feel guilty for not putting something in, even though I may give online.
You give online, right.
And it's – but to have the plate passed and for me just pass by cold-hearted.
Just pass it on to the next person. Yep. Nothing in.
Yeah, that's right. So
I don't have a problem not putting anything in if I'm paying some other way, Alden, none whatsoever.
You don't?
No.
But the example here in Nehemiah does make me think about maybe some of the ways I even work in our department. You know, we're given an allowance when we drive down to Portland to teach, and we're allowed a travel allowance. We're allowed a little bit of per diem to cover some food. And it would be easy, I think, to spend more than is needed. But if we can keep the cost down and... Yeah. You know, is that generosity or is that just trying to be efficient?
Yeah. Well, there are two other questions I think that we face here in Nehemiah. The danger of greed, because mm-hmm. right before this in Nehemiah 5, it tells about how the Jewish people were, the landowners, were laying heavy burdens on their fellow Jews. I mean, the chapter starts out by saying, now there was a great outcry of the people and of their wives against their Jewish kin, for there were those who said, with our sons and daughters, we are many. We must get grain so that we may eat and stay alive. And so it tells about how they were being taxed. So you have this incredible contrast here of the Jewish people who were oppressing their own brothers and sister Jews.
Which was technically illegal according to the Mosaic law. They weren't allowed to charge usury or interest against another Jew.
That's right. So you have that great danger of greed, and then you have the danger of money, and I would like for us to talk about that as well. In fact, Matthew has an interesting statement in the service in the Sermon on the Mount. No one can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth.
Well, I've thought about this. Money is a very interesting thing because we sometimes think that it comes to those who work hard, and oftentimes it doesn't. It comes to those who happen to be in the right place at the right time and make some strategic decisions. And some of those individuals can become very, very wealthy in a very, very short time, whereas somebody who labors all their lives may remain poor. I think the attraction of money or the danger of greed or the thing that makes greed us prone to greed is the thought that money brings security. Mm-hmm. We tend to think that if we have enough money or have a lot of money, we'll be secure. And I would like to adjust that thought. I don't think that money brings us security. It brings us choice. If you're wealthy, you have many more choices, which in a secondary sense might help you with security. But money itself does not bring security. You can still die in an accident. You can still die of a disease. You can still, all kinds of things can happen. Money gives you a lot of choices that you can then use to maybe get yourself out of a place of danger or something, but it doesn't automatically bring security. And I think if we realized that, we would realize that money is best seen as a tool to live with, not something to hoard to protect ourselves from whatever insecurities we might have.
Yeah. Well, Jesus' parable in Luke about the man who built the extra barns speaks to that, right? In one night, storm comes and his barns are gone. There goes your security if that's where
his life is gone.
Yeah. And, of course, you have this other statement in Matthew 5, too. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven, whether neither moth nor rust consume, where thieves do not break in and steal.
But also, if you have a lot of wealth, which I don't have, you do worry, because what happens if you lose it?
Well, and the more you own, and I've learned this, I don't own a lot, but the things I do own, the more I have to maintain. And the more I have to maintain, the more I worry then that I've put my time and energy into it, that if I lose it, I will feel much more grief because of my connection and attachment to it.
Yeah. And I read some years ago, somebody said that the modern form of slavery comes through our possessions. The more things you own, the more you are beholden to them.
That's right.
And remind me of a man I once knew. I stayed in one of his homes. He had five homes, one in Montreal, one in Vermont, one in Arizona, one in the Caribbean. I don't know where the fifth house was. And a friend of mine was the caretaker for the home in Vermont. We went there over Christmas once, and this man was chuckling. He said, yeah, the guy comes here about twice a year, but he's always worrying about the other four houses, what's happening. He hasn't been to this one for a year or that one for a year. And I thought to myself, what a way to live.
Yeah.
Always worrying about what you have.
Now, I would like to focus on, we've taken the essence from Nehemiah 5, and it's a startling example there, and it's startling juxtaposition to the way that the Jewish people had been oppressing their own brothers and sisters. But I would like to take a look at now some examples from the New Testament, in fact, contrasting two. One, the rich young ruler, where Jesus said, sell all that you own and distribute the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. That seems to me such a strenuous demand. Sell everything and give to the poor. The other example is Zacchaeus, because Zacchaeus didn't give away everything, and Jesus didn't demand that he give everything away. In fact, he commended him, came and stayed with him. So what do we make of those two examples, and how should that inform our life today?
They come from different positions. First of all, the rich young ruler, both of them appear to have money, but the rich young ruler's position, coming to Jesus asking what good thing he must do to inherit eternal life, he starts out with maybe some false premises even about what life is about. And when Jesus says, oh, if you've kept all the commandments, it is interesting, he doesn't mention the 10th one, the one about coveting, which maybe the man struggled with, but the command was, please come and follow me. The man was not willing when asked. Zacchaeus was never pressed to do that by Jesus directly. It was a work in his heart by the Holy Spirit. And it's interesting reading the text there in Luke where it says, he tells Jesus, look, Lord, I'm already, in the use of the present tense in the Greek, I am paying back. If I defrauded anybody, I am paying it back. Unbidden by Jesus, he's just already begun to give. How much would he end up giving in his life? He might end up giving most of it.
Yeah.
We don't know. There are certainly different personalities.
Yeah, I think the difference also is the degree to which they idolized their wealth. And I think the reason Jesus threw the charge to the rich young ruler to get rid of everything is because he wanted to in a very striking way point out to this young man that was actually his God. Mm-hmm. And by asking him to get rid of it all, he exposed that. Whereas Zacchaeus, I think, as you said, Brent, that in Zacchaeus' mind, his wealth was something that he was accumulating, probably unjustly, but an experience with Christ changed his heart, and money was not an idol anymore, and so there was no reason to ask him to give it all up.
I'm wondering if you know wealthy people who are generous with what they have and their money isn't something they pursue. I think I know people like that.
I do too.
Quite wealthy and very generous. Mm-hmm. So,
but they are... In fact, just recently I was at a church where one of my family members told me about a member of their church where they were incredibly generous but were very careful about letting the word get out because
less people take advantage of it.
They were always coming to them. In fact, they were away from church for a while because people were always, well, you have money. Here's a project. Here's a project. Here's a project. And so to have the resources and to be able to use them effectively is an important thing.
But those people are also very wise about where they give. They don't like to just give. They give it
right.
to a project that's well structured and properly managed, not just willy-nilly.
Sure. The story of Nehemiah is an amazing one, and we've already mentioned here the story of the widow's two mites. Now, that one is much more famous than Nehemiah's example, but the impact of that one widow's story was really quite remarkable. Mm-hmm. Next week, we will take up the story of the reading of the Word, which is another remarkable event. My thanks to Abby Wissing, our program engineer, and to Brant and Dave, to all of you for listening in for The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.